Okay, page 27, Osir Aleph. So where are we, my friends? We're still learning how to channel physical excitement or disappointment towards the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that's been the theme the last couple of weeks. And we're trying to move past that now. We're trying to figure out how to get past that. So he wants to warn us tonight about the dangers of not tapping into an opportunity that's taking place right before your eyes, and how a Jew has to learn how to look more deeply into things, because the transition that we're trying to make now is from things that we know how to feel, whether it was a monetary success or whether it was a personal loss, things where we're accustomed to feeling because our body is used to feeling and understands how to feel in those cases. We use the very simple example of a person who likes sports, and he's excited about sports, so it's easy for him to feel sports. And we were learning how we can channel that towards Hashem, channel that feeling. We all understand what it's like, the mashal we gave of a person who's driving on the road, and a car swerves in his direction, and he swerves out of the way, and his heart is racing. And we know how to get to that emotion, right? Either by choice or by force. And we've been working on how do I channel that towards Hashem. But now I want to let go of that, and I want to try to start to raise up a little bit the level and raise up our spiritual senses and try to tap into very strong spiritual feelings that are taking place around us, which sometimes we're missing. Sometimes something very big is happening right around us, all around us, and for whatever reason, we're just not receptive to it, and we're missing out on it. And again, we're not talking about the finer spiritual things that are taking place around us. He sort of gave us the big picture when we started, right? But now we're going step by step, and we're transitioning now from, again, using lower physical experiences, positive or negative, and now we're trying to say there are big spiritual things happening around you. Are we receptive to that? Are we picking up on it? Are we open to it? So let's see. Osir Aleph, page 27. Harbe hargashos yeshnan shepetichasam banu hein kapoter mayim kalos uklushos. He says there are certain hargashos, there are certain emotional feelings, things that should be opening up inside of us, like a poter mayim, like a stream, like a raging river in theory, right? And unfortunately by us, it's kalos uklushos. It's weak, it's shallow. Right? There should be this emotional flow that's taking place, and it's sort of like dripping out of us like a faucet that someone forgot to close tightly enough. And if we could just expand our senses, right? If we would just be able to take, again, that potential of emotional experience that we all have inside of us, there's a raging river of emotion inside of us, feeling inside of us, if we could just find a way to take that from theory to practice, it would become such a raging river, whose waters would never dry out. Literally, whose waters would never be falsified. The Mishnah describes, I think it's in Maseches Para? Mikvaos? There's a Mishnah that says somewhere in Taros, I'm not sleeping enough at night. That's the upshot. There's a Mishnah that says that if you have a stream of water, it must be in Mikvaos. If you have a stream of water that's flowing and flowing and flowing and flowing and flowing, and then at some point that water stops. Once in a very long period of time, the Mishnah identifies that water as Mayim Kozvim, right? Kol Adam Kozev. We're familiar with the word from Halo. Kol Adam Kozev means a person who's deceptive, a person who's not telling the truth. So here you have this river that's been flowing and flowing and flowing, and yet if the water stops once in a long time, it's called Mayim Kozvim. Right? And yet, there's a sense of if you act in a certain way all along, and then all of a sudden something happened and you shifted gears. So then we have to wonder, well, was it sincere all along? Right? Was it authentic to begin with? So we have these emotions inside of ourselves. We want to open up the river so it'll flow endlessly, forever. That it should truly be open. Lo yichazvu meimav. Its waters should never deceive themselves. The waters should never dry out. The emotions should always flow. We're tired of the ups and downs. We're tired of the little moments of spiritual highs followed by long periods of emptiness and lows. V'emein marchiv mosav. And if we don't find a way, again, to expand it and to widen it, so then God forbid that moment will be lost. Val tira shemesh, never to see the sun. And that's chaval. Because he wants us to believe, and we're trusting him as our doctor, who knows more about our inner workings than we know about ourselves, that there are really great things inside of ourselves that we don't know about. We're just not familiar with them. And we've been working on trying to get them out. So very often we pick up on a certain feeling, and because, again, if we're taking something we're used to and now we're channeling it towards the Shem, so we know what it feels like. We know the excitement we have when our sports team wins a big game, and we know how to channel that towards the Shem. We know what the happiness is, and we know how to redirect the happiness. Now we're saying a person's picking up on a spiritual reverberation, but he's not exactly sure what he's picking up on. And sometimes we misdirect it. Instead of trying to recognize it as a spiritual awakening, we think, oh, it must be something else. We immediately associate it with something of the physical world that we're used to responding to. For example, he says, Yesh lefamim shu sha'ish margish lamashal ini imis bekirba. Sometimes a person feels unsettled. Something is bothering him. So he sits down to make a cheshbon ha-nefesh. What's bothering me? Now, what are the first five things going to be on his list? They're all going to be things of this world. Right? Maybe I didn't sleep enough. Maybe I'm hungry. Maybe this. He's trying to figure out. Now, he's not immediately saying, right? Maybe my Shmona Esther this morning wasn't what it was supposed to be. That's not a study. But he's saying, what happened? Was there a phone call I had earlier this day that someone aggravated me? And that's why I'm feeling these negative feelings are coming out now. He feels displaced. He feels unsettled. There's a lack of the emus inside of himself. Maybe I need something to eat. Maybe I need a nap. Right? Maybe I need lishtos yain saraf. Maybe I need an alcoholic beverage to take the edge off a little bit. He's trying to figure out what is it. I'm like a little uptight. And immediately he's trying to figure out how can I satisfy the needs of the body, because he's assuming it's a need of the body. What happens? Nesfar gashazu kulumas shabbat. And all of a sudden, a little while later, that feeling dissipates. So he figures, okay, it was nothing. You know, maybe I did just need a nap, and maybe I did just need to grab a bite to eat. What was really happening was a small, still, thin voice inside of himself was trying to exert itself. Now again, it's like the kid in the back of the class who never raises his hand, right? And now for the first time, this kid like suddenly has this awakening, he's going to raise his hand. Right? And the kid like is starting to raise his hand, and he's very uncertain of himself, and the teacher says, you know, Yankel, do you have something to say? And immediately he's like, no, it's nothing. I was just stretching, right? Because he's not comfortable. It's outside of his comfort zone. So your neshama is starting to exert itself. It's a beautiful mashal. It's minho shatas aver me'evari neshama. It's the expansion. It's the stretching out. It's, so to speak, your inner spirit is reaching. It wants to come to the surface. I also have something to say. Could we maybe like shift gears for a moment? Says the neshama. Can we get into something a little deeper, a little more spiritual? Now again, the neshama is that kid who's like a little too frum for all of his friends. So I was like, we just play ball, right? And maybe we would enjoy if we went to shul today, we would enjoy that also. And all of a sudden, he feels very, he quiets down. And he said, no, come on, you just want to play. Come play some ball with us, and you'll see, this is fine. Sometimes a person has a moment of joy. And for whatever reason, it's a feeling of joy, but it's not coming from any specific physical thing. He doesn't identify necessarily with some type of physical outer trapping. Because in truth, what's happening here is that, again, a spiritual organ is trying to expand itself, exert itself. And the person, he's racking his brain trying to figure out, what am I feeling? What's this experience? He says it's a form of kishkush upirpur. Right? It's a form of something's knocking. There's something that's leaving him feeling very unsettled. Right? It's like a parpar, it's like a butterfly, it's fluttering around inside of him. Hanefesh haisa. There's something fluttering inside of him, and he can't figure it out for the life of him what it is. So what does he do? So he goes and he gets himself a drink. He says, you know what, maybe I'm just a little uptight. It was a busy week at work. He sits down on the couch and he takes a nice cold drink. Maybe I just need to do something a little bit more mundane. Now in truth, what's happening is his neshama is saying, no, you've been doing mundane things all week, and I'm trying to finally get a word in over here. And he misinterprets it. It's not that he actually satisfies the needs of the soul in this way, right? It's a temporary cover-up. For a moment, he'll feel satisfied, but he's going to wake up the next morning and something's still going to be off a little bit because he hasn't really satisfied the need. He's using something to touch it up superficially. I mean, David Aaron, who writes a lot of books. So he starts off one of his books. I think it's called The God-Powered Life. I think that was the book that it's in. He starts off the book, he says, you know that feeling when a person he feels like he needs something, he goes over to the refrigerator, he opens up the fridge, right? You're just like standing there in front of the fridge. Right? And you're thinking like, what's in this fridge that I need? Right? You're standing there. So he's very funny, especially when he speaks, but when he writes also. So he says, the truth is what you're looking for is not in the fridge. It's really in the freezer. Right? Maybe you need ice cream or something. He says, no, of course it's not really in the freezer either. Right? What you're looking for is something inside you, and you're picking up, you're sensing that something is calling for help, and you're looking at all the time, you're opening up your drawers, and you're opening up this, and you're looking here, and you're looking there, and you're not finding what's really this voice, again, this neshama inside of yourself, that's just not used to exerting itself. So what does a person do? So he goes and he sits on the couch, and he makes himself, he takes for himself, right, he drinks a little yayin saraf, he grabs himself a shot of his favorite whiskey or bourbon, and he's sitting on the couch, and he's trying to somehow get past this feeling, but he's not really quieting, he's not really silencing that feeling inside of him that he's very unsettled. Again, lo shehishkit bezeh parchusei ha-nefesh. It's not that he's truly addressing the feelings of the soul. Rakesis v'shisas hargashos gufo she'er ishu ve'er imu. What he's doing is he's diverting his attention. Because he's not sure, he's not sure he wants to really address what's going on here. Because to address what's really going on might, in fact, be demanding a major change in his life. Now, it starts off very quiet. Right? But in theory, we're about to open up a river of emotion that I've been avoiding for a long time. That's never going to stop flowing once I open it up. So he's very anxious about opening this river up. He knows it's there. But he's trying to divert his attention towards other things. He's redirecting those hargashos to something of the body. Right? In other words, he's making a lot of noise with his body to drown out the voice of his soul. Take the Nefesh HaChaim, for example. The Nefesh HaChaim talks about what happened when Adam and Chava sinned. Well, how did the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer Tov operate, so to speak, side by side prior to the Chet? And what changed after the Chet? So Nefesh HaChaim writes, I think it's in Shar Aleph, in Parak Vav, in Nefesh HaChaim, in a Haggad, one of the footnotes. He says, it used to be that the Yetzer Tov was the dominant voice. And the Yetzer Hara was sort of that quiet voice in the background. After the Chet of Eitz Hadas, the whole system got flipped. That's the Bechidosh of the Nefesh HaChaim. The whole entire system got inverted to the point that now the strong voice is always the Yetzer Hara, and there's a voice in the back that says, you know, maybe you could, right? And immediately the Yetzer Hara is very loud, he's vocal, and he's very abrasive in the way that he speaks, and he immediately silences the Yetzer Tov. Rav Dessler writes, it's so interesting even. When we talk about Yetzer Hara and Yetzer Tov, even the voice that they use, right? So often the Yetzer Hara speaks in terms of I, and the Yetzer Tov speaks in terms of you, right? I really don't want to get up for davening this morning. You really should get up for davening. So Rav Dessler writes, it's so interesting. Meaning the Yetzer Hara thinks he's in the command deck, you know, I'm the I. This is the essential me. And then there's this you, there's like this other version of yourself that's, you know, Nebuch is trying to like have a say here, but is being drowned out time and time again. So he says that's what's happening here. Your body, your neshama is trying to exert itself over the body for the first time in a long time. And the body is looking for all sorts of distractions to avoid it. We call her nefesh lo yishama, so that the voice of the soul shall not be heard. He says, I'll bring you a mashal from the ways of those who are osek in avodah zarah. Mashal lekomrei hamelech. Take, for example, people have this strange practice, right? All sorts of idol worshippers. Komer is a priest, an idol worshipper, the priest of the king. And what do? They're banging around on their tupim, leman lo yishama ha'av, there used to be an ancient practice. The Torah speaks about the terrible nature of this practice. One of the challenges of Akedas Yitzchak was all of a sudden Hashem seems to have gotten into human sacrifice, which was the farthest thing from everything Avram thought God was about, with the Jewish God, this Kel Rachum Bechanan was about. There was a practice called Molech. What was Molech? Molech was the sacrificing of one's child to the fire gods. You'd throw another human being into a fire. It's a tremendous carbon. Right? It's exceptionally barbaric, obviously, in our minds. But you know what they used to do? It was so sick, and there was a part of themselves that knew it was so sick, though, what would they do? In order to allow this father, right, to be able to have, so to speak, the courage to carry out this disgusting practice, what would they do? The priests would come and they'd bang their drums very loudly, so that when this Nebuch, this child, is screaming from within the leaping flames, the father can't hear it. The father can't hear the voice of his child, and therefore the father won't change his mind, won't have rahman is in trying to save his child until that's him. Why? Because the voice, the innocent voice of this child, which should so easily be able to exert itself, and so easily be able to be responded to, is just simply being drowned out. And that allows this perversion to take place. So says the Piazzetta, the same thing is taking place inside of ourselves. Right? There's a part of us that's absolutely correct and absolutely has a lot to say. It's like Israel trying to speak in the United Nations, you know? It tried to, as if, have something intelligent to say. And the whole world just drowns them out. You have nothing to say. Before you speak, you have nothing to say. After you speak, you have nothing to say. No one wants to hear what you have to say. Right? That's unfortunately Klal Yisrael's lot in the world. Hargashos gufniuso roashos kolkach. The emotions of the guf are so loud, are so thunderous, roaring so loudly, kolkach, atshri'idas hanefesh overas levatala, that therefore the stirring of the soul is entirely lost. The whole thing is just, it passes by. And look what he says here. It's a very sad, but again, in a very beautiful, Piazzetta the Rebbe, poetic way type of expression, because it hits home in a very harsh way. V'hi min hapalas nefeilim shel neshama. He says, this is a nefel, this is a form of a miscarriage of the soul. Here you have the opportunity to give birth, right, to a new emotion. An emotion that could change your life, the same way that if a new child is born into a family, the simcha that they feel, and the pain that a family feels, God forbid, if a woman loses a child, right? Here the soul is trying to give birth to something. The soul is about to create something so beautiful, so wholesome, that could take your whole, that could transform your whole worldview. Right? And unfortunately it was crushed, it was aborted, it was lost, it was destroyed. And it's very painful. So how do we learn? Right? How do we find that voice? How do we pick up on that voice? Again, we're not starting from things, we're not taking physical pleasures or physical disappointments and then redirecting them towards God. We're trying to start from the spiritual voice, but the spiritual voice is not so confident, can barely raise its hand. So here, once again, as a chabura, he talks to us as a chabura. The chabura has to work together. We have to talk this out together. We have to mechazik one another. We have to warn one another about the importance of what? Of becoming people who know how to what? Have a yodeya li staka. Person has to know how to be mistaka. What's the difference between seeing and being mistaka? What's the difference? When a person goes outside to do Kiddush Levana, right? So you're supposed to look up at the moon before you recite the bracha. But we're not supposed to be mistakel. We're not supposed to stare at the moon. A person sees a rainbow, there's a bracha you say on a rainbow. But the Gemara says a person shouldn't be mistakel at a rainbow. Right? There's certain things you're not supposed to be mistakel at. A person walks down the street and passes by a beautiful woman, there's a bracha a person can make on seeing a beautiful woman. But a staklus v'nashim, right, to look at any other woman other than one's own spouse, right, is an iser. The prohibition of a staklus. So what's the difference between seeing, right, the initial seeing versus a staklus? So if you look at the Magen Avraham, where he talks, I think, by Kiddush Hechos, Kiddush Levanim, by making a bracha on a rainbow over there, must be in Orach Chaim, Reishit Ches, Reishit Tes. The Magen Avraham, the Achronim say, the Poskim on Shulchan Aruch say, that yes, seeing is one thing and being mistakel is another thing. Mistakel means to look deeply. Mistakel means to meditate on something. I want to read just a very small piece from the opening piece in Rabbi Nachman of Breslov's Zechatzadev Chadash Lebrachas, Lekuti Maran. The very first piece he talks about is staklus. Okay? And these words became very famous already a number of years ago when Yosef Karduner made a famous song out of it. But he says as follows, Rabbi Nachman writes, not the very opening, it's about five lines in, after the first paragraph. He says, Ki ish ha-Yisraeli, this is Lekutei Moharan in the very first Torah, Ki ish ha-Yisraeli tzarech tamid li-estakel ba-seichel shel kol davar. A Jewish person needs to train himself li-estakel ba-seichel shel kol davar, to find the seichel of everything. What does it mean to estakel? Obviously it's something that requires some thought. You can't find it so easily. To estakel, you have to look deeply. Stakel doesn't mean just to see in a physical sense, but it means to be bisbonin, to meditate on, to really think about it. Right? Very often when we talk about understanding something, we say, I see what you're saying. Right? What do you see? I told you an idea. What did you see? It means you understood it in a deep way, as if it's omid lefanecha, as if it's standing before you. You can see it in a deep way. So when a Jew sees anything in this world, I have to ask myself, and now again, we're sort of, the Pesach Therapy is sort of bringing us back to what he had mentioned already a number of weeks ago, to be able to look at something of the physical world and not to see with physical eyes, to see with spiritual eyes. Again, we had the whole problem with the filter. We couldn't get past the filter. Now we're ready to start trying to get past the filter a little bit. So he says, we want to be able to look. So says Rabbi Nachman, we want to be able to lekasher atzmo al chokhma va'aseichel sheyesh b'kol dam. To not see things for what they are superficially, but to find the seichel, to find the inner message, so to speak, the chokhma elokis, the godly message that's contained within everything. Kedei sheyeyer lo aseichel sheyesh b'kol dam. To bring illumination to that thing. That it shouldn't just be a thing of this world, but in fact I see it as a spiritual thing. Like we spoke last week, right, from the Shar Yichud Be'amunah of the Baal Tanya, that everything of this world is really made up of what? It's made up of osios, it's made up of letters, the Gemara says. It's made up of spiritual lights. And I'm trying to find that. I want to see past, so to speak, the mask. I want to see past the curtain, and I want to see what's the seichel, what's the chokhmah, why did Hashem make this? Hashem made this, Hashem made apples, and Hashem made oranges. Why did Hashem need apples and oranges? Hashem wanted to give us fruit, he wanted us to have something sweet to eat. Right? Why do we need apples and oranges? What's the message of the apple? What's the message of the orange? To look deeply, you have to meditate deeply on these things. And when I figure out the secret of what that physical thing is, what the spirit of that physical item is, so then I come close to Hashem through that thing. It's no longer just an apple. It's no longer just about my own pleasure of munching on an apple. But it becomes a means of uplifting holy sparks. It becomes a very spiritual experience, which is an amazing thing. Imagine if we could get that much spiritual energy out of a simple act of eating an apple. Says Rabbi Nachman, the seichel, right, the idea that stands behind whatever it is that I'm looking at is like a tremendous light that illuminates whatever it is that I'm trying to, whatever pathway I'm trying to travel upon. Chochmas Adam, he quotes the pasuk in Kohelis, Chochmas Adam, Tayir Panav. And then he goes on and he says, this is Yaakov Avinu was an expert at. Yaakov Avinu was able to uncover the Seichel, Shebechol Davar. And Esav saw things more simplistically, more superficially. What did Esav see when he saw the Bechora? The Bechora to Esav meant, it's a lot of work, right? Mikdash is a lot of work, and it's dangerous work. A lot of rules. If you mess up, it could cost you your life. Esav only saw everything that the Avodas Beis Hamikdash was not supposed to be. On Chanukah, one of the reasons that the whole Chanukah story took place, the reason things were falling apart, the language of the Bach, when he describes why Hashem nearly took away Bayis Sheni at the midway point of Bayis Sheni, is because the Kohanim got lazy. The Kohanim was just job, it was work. Right? Now that's the opposite extreme, where you're involved in such holy work and all it's become is just another job. The Kohanim were going to their work in the Beis Hamikdash as if it was a 9-to-5 job. Right? That's a terrible avla, and Hashem almost took away the Beis Hamikdash because then he took it away to the point that, you know, there was nothing but a single cruise of oil left. Right? But now we're trying to do the opposite. We're trying to go to our mundane jobs and say, no, this is nothing mundane about my job. Every second of my day, whatever I'm involved in, is a spiritual pursuit. So we say to one another, says the PSS Therapy, the bottom of page 27, we say to the members of our Chabura, have yodei l'snaka. Learn how to see deeply. Learn how to see past the outer trapping of everything in this world. Uvechol davar Hashem misrachish bekir b'cha. Everything that happens inside of you and everything that happens outside of you. Don't trade it in for a nap on the couch or a cold beer or a steak. Right? Try to find out what it really is. Where's that feeling really coming from? It's the neshama that's been so quiet for so long. Again, going back to the moment that the whole system got flipped inside out, that the neshama, that the Yetzer Tov became you, right? And the Yetzer Hara became I. We're trying to get past it. We're trying to flip the system back on its head. That's a big job. But we need to look deeply. The Anus Taklus Re'iyah al Davar Anim Subavad says the PSS, as we've explained, this Taklus doesn't just mean Re'iyah, it's not superficial seeing. But when I see something and I really see it, you know what's happening? It's not, instead of it being, God forbid, a lost moment of spirituality, a miscarriage of the soul, it's what? I'm giving birth. I'm giving birth to a spiritual creation. Now I have something to really look at. Right? And while someone else might be tired of it after a few minutes because only they're only seeing the outer trapping, which can only last so long, you can look at it forever. Like I've said so many times already, the Chazon Ish said I could stare at a flower forever and see an endless amount of godliness. Say. The Rebbe doesn't want you to be sitting in the back of the chavura, not talking.
Is that realistic? To be able to always look at an apple and try to find.
What do you mean? Is it realistic? Is it realistic for
go through life always looking at an apple and finding the spirituality in an apple? I understand if you look at an apple once or twice.
I'll be so bold as to say yes, it is realistic. Okay. We're very far from it, and we're not looking.
And I guess question number two is, and maybe I'm jumping ahead, but how would?
Okay, so at first the stockless has to be right. The whole goal, b'nei machshava tova. The punchline is that we've trained ourselves to do this so well that we don't have to think about any of these things. That all these things are automatic. Now we're still in the awkward stage where we're just starting to buy into the whole concept. So I have to actually, if I want to experience. Is this? So I have to sit with an apple, and I have to have a moment with an apple. And I have to really think about it. I have to sit with my apple, and I have to say, apple, you know. Let me think about you for a second, right? Where did you come from? Why are you here? Why did Hashem make you? But to really think about it, at first it seems silly to have this conversation with the apple, the same way it seems silly to have a conversation with God. Right? As we've been talking about, a person driving in their car, talking, having a conversation with Hashem when Hashem is not responding. How long can a person go like that? Right, but to really look at this apple and to say, hold on a second. It's not only that this apple is part of Hashem's chachmah. This is an expression of Hashem's chachmah. It's more than that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mechadish b'chol yom tov b'maaseh bereishis, which means that this apple that's sitting on my desk doesn't exist because I bought it in the supermarket and I put it on my desk. This apple exists in this moment, at this very moment in time, because Hashem's ratzo and His divine will is willing it into existence at this moment. Which means that if for a second God didn't want this apple to exist under my jurisdiction, this apple would cease to exist instantly. That's it. We'd cease to exist. So Hashem is willing this particular apple, with whatever its shape is, whatever its color is, and He's willing it onto my desk right here. And now I take this apple in my hand and I make a brach on it. And I think about what it means. Baruch Atah Hashem, King Melech HaOlam, the Master of the Universe. And I close my eyes for a second, and I allow myself to travel the universe. And I try to picture apple trees all around the world. Right, that all have some distant kesher to this apple that I'm sitting in my office eating, and all of a sudden this apple becomes a very spiritual thing. So you're right. Am I gonna sometimes I'm just gonna come home and I'm just gonna want to eat my dinner, and I'm happy I just remembered to make a bracha at all, to mumble a bracha before I ate my dinner, right? Instead of having like a whole meditative session, right, with the hot dog before I eat the hot dog. Okay, you're right. But the Rebbe wants us to believe that yes, it is possible. It is possible to do this all the time, and it's certainly possible of us to start with proactive, meditation, not just like hoping that the apple is going to open up to you, but you open up to the apple, you initiate, and you try to make something of it.
But it is a tremendous challenge, because as you just said, the Kohanim and the Beis Hamikdash lost their
right, ability. Right, and anything, even the
anything more,
exactly,
probably more inspiring than doing that. Yeah, right. At some point, it became mundane.
Even the most spiritual things can become stale, right. And I don't breathe fresh life into it, but that's this cystocles. I'm constantly finding that means if I've gotten used to take an idea in Torah, right? I can think of certain ideas in Torah when I first heard this idea, it was so like earth shattering. Now, over time, you've gotten used to that idea, and you've hopefully absorbed it into your Torah philosophy and how you understand. Pasuk in Chumash, or how you understand an attitude that a Jew is supposed to have, it's become so commonplace by you. You've lived with this idea for so long that it's not exciting anymore. What did you say? Tefillin. Right, tefillin is a great example. The first time you put on tefillin, it's unbelievable. Right? And by now, halavai, it should mean anything to you, other than just the rote performance of putting on tefillin. So how do I get out of that slump? So that's what Rabbi Nachman is saying here in this first piece of Likutei Maharan, right? It's dakel to the seichel l'chol davar. So that means I have absorbed a certain madrega of the seichel of this matter, right? I've understood tefillin on a certain level. The fact that I'm bored with where I'm holding a tefillin is really a wake-up call to say, okay, well, it's time to refresh my relationship with tefillin. The same way the Kohanim and the Beis Hamikdash had gotten tired of the avoda. Right, and Hashem said, well, maybe it's time to kind of renew the Avodah. It's time to have a Chanukah of sorts. Right? The Chanukah's Beis HaMikdash was not just the renewal of the Beis HaMikdash simply because the Avodah made a mess. It was an entire renewal of the spirit of what it meant to work in the Beis HaMikdash. So you're right, we have to constantly revive it and refresh it and breathe new seichel. And if I understood it at a certain level, and now that level has become, you know, sort of boring by me, okay, so go deeper. That's a great opportunity for a person to go deeper. But to constantly be trying to give birth to a new depth. Tzura Sadavar, four lines from the bottom, 27. Tzura Sadavar Anamotzim Omolidim, right? The form, the matter and the form of that thing is born, is created. Achetiyat Tzura Shenestakava. Until it takes on a whole, I've created something, right? It was just an apple. And I say, no, this is not your friend. I said, what are you talking about? It's still an apple. He said, no, I create this, I've redefined this apple through my machshavos. Right? Umisha margish eza hargasha, sarachu listakel. So therefore, when I have any type of hargasha, I have a feeling. Right? So catch yourself before you go and stand in front of that fridge, trying to figure it out, like Rabbi David Aaron said, what is it that I'm looking for in the fridge or the freezer? Pause for a second and say, wait a minute. Before I go down that path, let me train myself to first ask myself, maybe it's something of the spirit that's looking for a little attention. Maybe I haven't learned Torah all week. Maybe I haven't davened one meaningful Shmona Esrei all week. And maybe I'm going to stop right now and I'll pick up David Melech's beautiful Tehillim. And I'm going to say one parak of Tehillim. And it could be that this parak of Tehillim that I'm going to say in the next 30 seconds is going to be more meaningful and more God-inspired and filled than every minion that I've davened in all week. Okay, so that's good. I've responded to something. I found the seichel. I found the root of the problem, so to speak, and I'm doing something about it. Klomer lahotzi basura ulistakel basura sargasha. It says the Pesach the Rebbe. Sometimes there's just a very small reverberation that you missed. It passed by, unfortunately, a miscarriage of the soul. Sometimes a huge opportunity is passing you by, and you're missing out on it. Let's see the example that he gives. Lo argashos ketanos bovad overis bo. It's not only that we sometimes miss out again on more fine, you know, calls of the spirit. Ragam mitzos, top of page 28, shlemos overus bo, kluumos shabo. Sometimes a huge mitzvah walks right past your face and you totally missed it. Because you thought there was something else that you were seeking. And Hashem sent the mitzvah right before your eyes, and it didn't even register by you. Chaval. Here gishmaj bekirbo, you know that something, you just felt something, but not for a second did you realize that there was such a spiritual opportunity right in front of your face. And he can't describe at all what he just experienced. He doesn't have the means of recognizing what he experienced. Uvamash shona hagashasa b'leil Yom Kippurim, mirosh hashanah, mileil Pesach, v'kedoma. Sometimes a person says, I know I felt something on the Leil Seder. I know I felt something on Rosh Hashanah. I know I felt something on Yom Kippur, but I can't tell you the difference between these three. If you gave him three different types of schnapps, you know, he'd be able to tell, oh, this is an 18-year-old bottle, this is a 15-year-old bottle, this is a 22-year-old bottle. That he's able to distinguish between the different ones. Right? For Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Pesach, yeah, I felt something good, I don't know. Not realizing that, what do you mean? They're totally different oros that are descending onto the world on Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and on Pesach. But he doesn't have the sensitivities to pick up on it. L'chein anu masir, and therefore, again, we warn one another. We're machazik one another. Train yourself, right? Lamedas atzmecha liestakel. Train yourself. Acquire this trait of looking deeply. Uvechlal tia liish mechapis es Hashem b'chol makom ulai yimsa es hakel mestater. Try to find that God who's hiding behind whatever it is that I'm trying to get to. Ves kedushas kvoda. Try to find Hashem within that thing. Vakasher tivakshayu timseayu. And when I search for him, then I'll find him. And you know where you're going to find him. Once you train yourself to start looking, where are you going to find God? Find him everywhere. Once you've trained yourself to start looking for God instead of looking for something in the fridge, where are you going to find him? You're going to find him all over the place. For the first time in your life, you're really going to say, you know what? Hashem is not actually only found in shul. And Hashem is not only found when I'm sitting in front of a sefer. Hashem is found at my desk in my office when I'm eating lunch. I never knew that God was here. I mean, I knew in theory Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is always, you know, Hashem is everywhere. Right? But I never really felt it. Now I'm feeling it for the first time. Harchek, harchek, harchek. A person who wants to experience this, first of all, needs to slow down a little bit. Because right? If you're just going to grab the apple, make a quick bracha, and start munching, you're not going to get anything out of that apple, other than the apple. Ki ein ha-mayer mizbonin. A person who's moving too quickly is not a person who's thinking. He's not analyzing. He's not trying to find something more. We're looking for the chachma, looking for this, the chachma elokis, the godly wisdom within something, which is not so easily identified. So that takes a lot of patience. You have to think, to put time into it. Aval gam hishamar benafshecha shelo tagia b'besino secha arketzei gvula, but don't go the opposite direction, that a person becomes, you know, so slow and so meditative in everything that he does, right? That in the end he becomes lazy and he becomes burdened by it. So he has to strike a balance. Right? I think that's the answer according to your question. Right. You're not going to walk outside, you know, after this, and everything's going to be illuminated. Everything's going to be letters of divine letters filling all of reality, which is true. That is what is b'cha u'v'chol s'vivosecha. That's in us and all around us. But okay, our eyes are just starting to open up. We're just learning how to look more deeply for the first time. Okay, let's just do a job more. We got 3 more minutes. Lamashal. Imagine people start to get together for Shalash Shuddis. People start to get together for Shalash Shuddis. Do you not feel anything by Shalash Shuddis? Shalash Shuddis, he's going to describe for us now, is the heights of Shabbos. Right? If you didn't feel anything by Kabbalah Shabbos, and Shachris, you were half asleep, and leaning, you know, you're hoping it's going to be Parshas Netzavim or Vayelech, right? Wherever Yaliyah is 3 or 4 Pesukim, it's Machaya, right? And now, at Mincha, fine, you woke up, you were groggy from your nap, you slept yourself off to Mincha, but now you're sitting by Shalash Shuddis, Rava de Rava, as it says in the Sfarim, Rava de Ravin, right? It's the Ratzon of the most desirable time of Shabbos. It's those final moments of Shabbos before a person has to leave that world of Shabbos and go back to check all the emails that he missed from whoever it was over Shabbos, right? So it says the PSS, do you not feel anything then? How do you not feel something then? Hatzadikim amru sheshas shalosh suudos he ashosh shel yafa sha'achas b'tshuva ma'isim tovim b'olam haza mikol chay olam hapa. It says in Pirkei Avos, better 1 hour, 1 moment, a shah could be even 1 turn, 1 second, right? 1 move in the direction of tshuva and ma'isim tovim in this world is a greater pleasure than all of olam haba has to offer you. And you know what the tzadikim say? He said the tzadikim say, what's that moment? That if it's really good, it's not just the taste of Olam Haba, it's all of Olam Haba. It's a really good moment at Shalash Shuddis. It's a really good moment at Shalash Shuddis. He says, that moment, the Tzaddikim say, is better than all the pleasure of the world to come. So how are you not tapped into that, he says. He says, I heard from my father-in-law, my holy father-in-law, who says, Shamati, that I heard, Shamagid Mikoznitz, the Koznitz are Magid, Zechir Tzadik Levracha, Amr B'sholosh Sudos Shahayi V'china Sadikim Yoshvim, V'atroseim B'rasheim V'nenim Yizim Ashchina. He said, Shalash Shuddis is L'mashal, it's like that description of, again, the world to come, where the Tzadikim are sitting with crowns of upon their head, and they're being nenna, they're enjoying the Ziva Shechina, they're sitting in the Divine Presence, with the Kadosh Baruch Hu's glow shining upon them. So how is it possible that the Tzaddikim are able to be experiencing, right, not just Me'ein Olam Haba, all of Shabbos Me'ein Olam Haba, this is Olam Haba Mamish. Va'ata ha'eincha margish mu'uma. And you don't feel anything? Have our senses become so dulled that we don't feel anything? And at the end of the day, we have to ask ourselves at this point, we have to stop in a second, but you have to ask yourself, one of two things, right? One of two things. Either the tzaddikim are all lying to us, and they're pretending to feel something that they're not really feeling, and I'm not really so comfortable with that approach, right? Or they know something that we don't yet know. Right? I'm much more comfortable assuming that maybe there really is something. You look at the guy next to you, and you see this person, this guy is totally, he's lost. He's closing his eyes during Shalash Shuddis, and he's lost in Shalash Shuddis. And you're thinking, I don't understand. They don't even put out such good food for Shalash Shuddis. You know, these chips are stale, right? This guy looks like he's flying in the Himmel. And you're sitting there, like, trying to, you know, poking at your tuna fish, trying to figure out, like, what did he have that I don't have? Right? So says the P.S. Esther, have we lost our spiritual sensitivities? That something that should be so grand, that something that should be so lofty, it doesn't even register by us? That's a big problem, if that's true. Okay, and he's going to go on, and he's going to help us to learn how to shake this off, and how to reawaken our spiritual sensitivities. But again, if we start to become people who are mistakel, not people who are just racing through this world as we so often are, but we stop for a few moments, we just look at the world for a moment, we look at our own children, we look at our own possessions, and we just think about the godly wisdom that fills everything. Again, am I going to wake up? Am I going to be able to look around and just see it all around? No, not at first. Right? But to train ourselves, to be mechazik, like he says, the chevra, one another. Have you a daily stakel? Don't just be someone who sees things with a ri'iyah, superficial seeing, but become a person who looks deeply. And you'll see, like you said, Eifotim say, where are you going to find the Kodesh Baruch Hu? You'll find him b'cha, you'll find him within you, b'chol svi'il asecha, and you'll find the Kodesh Baruch Hu all around you. All right, b'shevizocha.